Morning News for Monday, October 24th. Coming up on this newscast, two rogue cops in Eugene are in prison now, but claims against the city total more than $1 million. Hurricane Wilma made landfall in Florida overnight, while the season's 22nd named storm, Hurricane Alpha, hovers over the Atlantic. Hurricane Valerie is all set to pound the Bush administration. Patrick Fitzgerald is expected to hand down indictments today or tomorrow in the Valerie Plame CIA leak case. And in Iraq, after the referendum on the Constitution, violence has surged. The American death toll is now almost 2,000. Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy in the morning, patchy fog, chances of showers, and then clearing partially in the afternoon with highs around 60 degrees. All of that and more coming up on the Cable Morning News. Two rogue Eugene police officers are in prison now, but claims against the city for their actions have cost more than $1 million, and more are coming in. This month, Eugene agreed to pay $250,000 to settle three lawsuits, prompted by former police officers Roger Magana and Juan Francisco Lara. That brings the total so far above $1.06 million. Another woman sued last month, the 14th to do so in the case. Magana is serving a 94-year prison sentence for raping, sexually abusing, or harassing 13 women during his 8 years on the force. Lara, with less than 3 years in uniform, is serving more than 5 years for using his position to coerce women into having sex while he was on duty. The scandal and concerns about racial profiling led to changes in the police department, expensive reviews, and an election proposal for citizen oversight of complaints against officers. This weekend, voters should start getting ballots on the city charter amendment that would allow the city to hire a police monitor and appoint a citizen review board. The election is November 8th. Congressional hopeful Jim Feldkamp is rejecting calls from Democrats to return $10,000 he received from indicted House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. Feldkamp's political director, Jennifer Gaskell, said it's unreasonable for critics to demand the return of contributions from a politician who has not been convicted. Feldkamp, a Eugene Republican, said last month that he plans to run against Representative Peter DeFazio in Oregon's 4th Congressional District. DeFazio beat Feldkamp in 2004. DeLay, last month, gave up his House leadership post after a Texas grand jury indicted him on conspiracy and money laundering charges. Following the indictment, Oregon Democrats called on Feldkamp to return what state party spokesperson Kelly Steele called dirty money from Tom DeLay and his corrupt pay-to-play political machine. Feldkamp received his contribution from DeLay's Political Action Committee, Americans for a Republican Majority. Nationally, at least three Republican members of Congress have returned contribution from DeLay's PAC after his indictment. Many more have taken Feldkamp's position. Last week was Oregon Harvest Week, and throughout the weekend, communities across the state held events to help bring attention to Oregon's hungry. KBOO's Noah Eaton reports.
Governor Ted Kulongowski is joining Oregon Food Bank and communities across the state in recognizing Oregon Harvest Week. Anti-hunger advocates say it's a good time to let people know that Oregon still remains among the top 10 worst states in the nation in hunger. Lisa Wiebe of Oregon Food Bank says many of the people asking for help are working in low-wage jobs.
Fuel's gone up, housing costs. Those costs impact, and when you have a worker who's making maybe $7.25 or $8.50 an hour, they just can't afford to pay for themselves and their family.
Wiebe says emergency food box requests increased another 4% last year, the ninth increase in a row. About 876,000 people received an emergency food box at least once last year.
Each month, that's 194,000 people. If you just think about the size of the city of Portland, that's almost half its population. It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
About 1 in 5 Oregonians had to have some help feeding their families last year. Content was provided by the Oregon News Service. I am Noah Eaton, KBOO News.
The international port of Coos Bay has taken the first step toward rebuilding the North Spit industrial area, with an agreement over an option to buy a former warehouse or mill site. The timber giant wants $25 million for nearly 1,300 acres of vacant land that once held a containerboard mill employing hundreds of workers. Over the last 20 years, vessel calls to Coos Bay have dropped from 271 to about 50. Weyerhaeuser has been a factor in the dwindling traffic as it shut down a sawmill, a wood chip export facility, a large-scale logging operation, and the North Spit Mill. Last Friday, 8 Portlanders set out on a caravan across the country as part of the campaign to end AIDS. The Portland group is one of 9 from around the country headed for a November 5th rally in Washington, D.C. KBOO's Jacob Fenston has more.
We have the knowledge and the resources to put an end to the pandemic. We just don't have the political will.
That's Lowen Berman, one of the 8 Portlanders on the caravan to end AIDS. When I spoke with Berman earlier in the day, the group was about 180 miles outside Portland and planning to reach Boise, Idaho by evening. That's just one of the 16 cities the group will visit during their 2-week journey to the capital. At each stop, the group will stage rallies and events with local AIDS activists. They'll also pick up more caravanners as they go. With a total of 9 caravans leaving from points across the country, 150 cities will host events along the way. And on November 5th, they'll all converge in Washington, D.C. for 4 days of action to end AIDS. The group's demands include stopping cuts to Medicaid and reauthorizing and fully funding the Ryan White CARE Act. The CARE Act, which funds services for people living with HIV/AIDS, expired on September 30th. Berman says Congress needs to provide more funding for the CARE Act and reauthorize it immediately.
For the last 3 years, every year, the Ryan White funds to Portland have gone down at the same time that the numbers of individuals living with HIV and AIDS in Portland has gone up.
Berman also says the CARE Act should be passed without limitations on the use of the funds for non-medical services.
One of the proposals of the Bush administration is to limit funding for only direct medical care, and for low-income folks not having access to the other support services like psychosocial support, day center, food, housing, makes it impossible for them to access the care. If you're living on the street, don't know where your next meal's coming from, it doesn't have any good, do any good to have access. Theoretical access to medical care.
Caravanners are also calling for fully financing the Global AIDS Fund.
Internationally, we're calling for full funding of the Global AIDS Fund and full funding of use of those funds for science-based prevention. The Bush administration has limited the use of funds from the U.S. to abstinence-based programs. But we know that condoms, needle exchange, programs like that are far more effective at stopping the pandemic than simply abstinence-based programs.
Another demand is forgiving debt in the world's 50 poorest countries. Caravanners say that would allow cash-strapped governments to focus funds on fighting AIDS, not repaying banks.
One thing that people have to understand about the AIDS pandemic is, as so many other social ills, it is affecting primarily poor people and people of color, which is, again, an explanation of why the funding isn't being made available to deal with it.
This is true both in the United States and internationally, says Berman.
One of the things we're going to do when we get to Washington, D.C. is we're going to have a march through the Anacostia neighborhood of Washington, D.C., and this is the African-American community. And in that community, literally a stone's throw from the Capitol, 1 in 5 men are HIV positive, 20%.
Nationwide, African Americans account for over 50% of new HIV infections, while Latinos account for 19%. These two groups, which together represent only about a quarter of the U.S. population, account for 2/3 of new cases. For the Portland caravan, the next stop after Boise is Salt Lake City, where activists have collected 8,500 pairs of shoes. The shoes will be displayed in downtown Salt Lake to represent the 8,500 people who die of AIDS every day. I'm Jacob Fenston, KBOO News.
Hurricane Wilma weakened to a Category 2 storm with winds of 110 miles an hour as it races across Florida. It came ashore this morning south of Naples as a Category 3 storm. Wilma is Florida's 8th hurricane in 15 months. At least one death in Florida is blamed on the storm. Wilma's the 12th hurricane of the season, tying the record for the most hurricanes to form in an Atlantic season. There were 12 hurricanes once before in 1969. Record-keeping began in 1851. Record-breaking tropical storm Alpha struck the Caribbean island of Hispaniola yesterday. According to Reuters, the storm is threatening the island shared by Haiti and the Dominican Republic with deadly flash floods and mudslides. Alpha formed in the Caribbean Sea on Saturday as the 22nd tropical storm or hurricane of the Atlantic season, breaking the record for most storms set in 1933. The center of the storm went ashore near the town of Barahona on the southwest coast of the Dominican Republic early yesterday. Forecasters said the storm could drop as much as 15 inches of rain over Hispaniola. Sustained winds were about 50 miles per hour, but the storm was expected to weaken rapidly and could dissipate over the mountains on the island. The naming of Alpha on Saturday marked the first time the Hurricane Center used the Greek alphabet since it began naming storms in 1953, because it has run out of pre-assigned names for this season. The 2005 hurricane season has had so many storms that all the storm names pre-assigned for this year were used up with Hurricane Wilma. And if you have any information on why we can only get 21 pre-assigned names out of an alphabet that has 26 letters in it, we'd appreciate your calls. Republican U.S. Senate leader Bill Frist, potential 2008 White House contender, is facing a federal probe of his stock sales. According to Reuters, Frist launched a sharp defense of his leadership during a weekend visit to the early caucus state of Iowa. Frist asked Iowa Republican leaders and activists to look at our track record in the Senate on issues like trade, taxes, and energy, and said his Democratic opponents were practicing tired old scare tactics. It was the Tennessee Republicans' first visit of the year to Iowa, a state that traditionally kicks off the presidential nominating season. He met privately with Iowa activists before the dinner and scheduled private sessions before his departure yesterday. Frist said he'll decide after the 2006 congressional elections whether to seek the White House. His visit was overshadowed by a federal investigation into his stock sales, one of a series of ethics allegations that have hit prominent Republicans. The California Air Resources Board, which sets air quality standards for the nation's most polluted state, will consider a 3-year delay in enforcing standards that mandate cleaner burning transit buses. FSRN's Leilani Albano reports.
In a move that some consider a setback for the environment, the state's Air Quality Board will decide today on a 3-year rollback in enforcing measures for cleaner running buses. To meet the state's emission standards, the California Air Resources Board 5 years ago implemented tough measures mandating that the state's buses cut down emissions of smog-producing nitrogen oxide in 2007. Today, the board will consider pushing back their target date to 2010 because diesel buses have not adopted the technology to improve emissions. Mike Eaves is spokesman with the California Natural Gas Vehicle Coalition. He says that such a move would be unfair to other industries that have scrapped diesel technology for better alternatives.
Our industry has complied, and we will be in a position to offer the low-emission products in 2007 just as prescribed by the Air Resources Board rules. And we think that it's an injustice to our manufacturers who have spent millions of dollars to comply to roll back the standards and allow transit properties that want to buy diesel engines to purchase those engines without coming up with appropriate offsets.
According to the LA Times, diesel emissions are the biggest sources of smog and soot, the state's largest air pollutants. In a report by the Times, Alan Schaefer, executive director of the Diesel Technology Forum, states that diesel manufacturers cannot meet the standards for 2007 because they do not have the technology for developing such fleets. But
we
Eaves counters Schaefer's claims.
And the
he says that the diesel industry can meet standards, but is unwilling to produce cleaner buses because of its relatively small market, with only 300 transit buses produced in California each year. The Natural Gas Coalition spokesman also says that any move to roll back emission standards would be detrimental to the state's air quality, especially in the Central Valleys and Northern California regions, where most buses operate on diesel fuels. To decrease emissions, Los Angeles took drastic steps in 1993 to transition to buses that use cleaner fuels. Rick Jagger, who is spokesman for the Metropolitan Transportation Agency in Los Angeles, says the results have been positive.
The impacts have been that we've really led the nation in terms of showing people that you can operate an alternative fuel fleet the size of metros, 2,100 buses, You can still transport 1.2 million people, and you can do it in a clean and efficient way.
The Air Resources Board will vote on the proposal today. For FSRN, this is Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
Federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald appears to be laying the groundwork for indictments this week over the outing of a covert CIA operative. Lawyers and other sources involved in the case said yesterday that possible charges include perjury and obstruction of justice. In a preview of how Republicans would counter charges against top administration officials by Fitzgerald, Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison of Texas brushed aside an indictment for perjury. Speaking on NBC's Meet the Press, she suggested Fitzgerald may be merely trying to show that 2 years of investigation was not a waste of time and dollars. Fitzgerald's investigation has focused largely on Karl Rove, President George W. Bush's top political advisor, and Louis Libby, Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff, and their conversations about CIA operative Valerie Plame with reporters in June and July of 2003. Legal sources said Fitzgerald is expected to give final notice to officials facing charges as early as today and may convene the grand jury on Tuesday, tomorrow, to deliver a summary of the case and ask for approval of the possible indictments. The grand jury is to expire on Friday unless Fitzgerald extends it. Fitzgerald could still determine that there was insufficient evidence to bring charges, but the lawyer said that appeared increasingly unlikely. The White House initially denied that Rove and Libby were involved in any way in the leak. Republican Senator George Allen of Virginia joined those saying Rove and Libby should step down if they're indicted. This according to Reuters. The FBI has conducted clandestine surveillance on some U.S. residents for as long as 18 months at a time without proper paperwork or oversight. Previously classified documents will be released today as part of a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. According to the Washington Post, they also indicate that the FBI has investigated hundreds of potential violations related to its use of secret surveillance operations. These operations have been stepped up dramatically since September 11, 2001, but are largely hidden from public view. In some cases, agents obtained emails after a warrant expired, seized bank records without proper authority, and conducted an improper, unconsented physical search. Although heavily censored, the FOIA documents released today provide a rare glimpse into the world of domestic spying, which is governed by a secret court and overseen by a presidential board that does not publicize its deliberations. The records are also emerging as the House and Senate battle over whether to put new restrictions on the controversial USA Patriot Act, which made it easier for the government to conduct secret searches and surveillance, but has come under attack from civil liberties groups. The documents suggest that there may be at least 13 instances of unlawful intelligence investigations that were never disclosed to Congress. Suspected insurgents opened fire at two civilian cars today in Baghdad, killing three municipal workers and a passerby. As police said, stepped-up attacks over the last 2 days have killed at least 44 Iraqis. Meanwhile, the toll among American service members killed in the Iraq War is approaching 2,000 dead, with the announcement of a Marine killed yesterday during fighting in western Iraq. In addition, the bodies of eight Iraqis who apparently were kidnapped and killed in captivity were found in the capital today. The Marine was killed by small arms fire in Ramadi. The death raised to at least 1,997, the number of members of the U.S. military who have died since the Iraq War started in March 2003. This is according to an Associated Press count. Today's worst attack occurred in southwestern Baghdad when suspected insurgents opened fire at two civilian cars, killing three of the municipal workers they were carrying and a passerby. A suicide car bomb killed two Iraqis and wounded five in an attack on a police patrol in the northeastern neighborhood of Shab, where insurgents had kidnapped and murdered a defense lawyer in Saddam Hussein's trial last week, said Police Lieutenant Malik Sultan. Insurgents also opened fire on an Iraqi army checkpoint in western Baghdad, killing a soldier and a girl who was standing in front of her nearby house. This was according to police First Lieutenant Tir Mahmood. In two other attacks in the capital, a drive-by shooting killed one police officer and two others were wounded by a roadside bomb. Yesterday, more than 33 Iraqis died in a swell of violence in Iraq, including 12 laborers, five of them brothers who were gunned down by insurgents at a construction site outside the city of Hilla. With high unemployment in Iraq, men often commute long distances to find day jobs as laborers in the cities. Insurgents also fired mortar rounds that set fire to an oil pipeline in northern Iraq, wounding two Iraqi soldiers. The son of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri has called for his father's killers to stand trial in an international court. Saad Hariri welcomed a UN report released late on Thursday which implicated Syrian officials and their Lebanese allies in the assassination. Syria on Saturday repeated its long-standing denial of involvement in the February killing of Mr. Hariri. A Syrian official said the report was based on preconceptions and the testimony of Syria's opponents. Assistant Foreign Minister Ahmed Arnes said the report puts Syria in the dock and vilifies it without evidence. Syria offered a promise to cooperate further with the investigation, but the BBC's Ian Pannell in Damascus said it was unclear what that meant or whether it would satisfy Syria's many critics. The U.S. has urged swift action over the report ahead of a U.N. Security Council meeting tomorrow that will discuss its findings. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said there will have to be some way to ensure accountability for what has already been found here. A senior British Army officer serving in Iraq who voiced concerns over a lack of armored vehicles for his men has resigned. Details over the resignation emerged just days after another of Lieutenant Colonel Nick Henderson's soldiers was killed in a bomb attack in Basra. Last month, the 43-year-old commanding officer of the Coldstream Guards, who is married with children, made a request to senior officers for extra warrior armored personnel carriers. It is understood that Lieutenant Colonel Henderson, whose battalion is responsible for security in the southern Iraqi city of Basra, was concerned that Land Rovers did not offer his men enough protection from terrorist bomb attacks. Those attacks have left 9 soldiers dead since May. It's unclear whether that request for more carriers was authorized. Henderson's a highly rated officer who joined the Coldstream Guards in 2003 after transferring from the cavalry. Early in his career, he was identified as a high flyer and won a place at the Army Staff College, where future senior commanders are taught high-level tactics and strategy. He was said to have been devastated by the death last week of Sergeant Christian Hickley, who took the full force of a blast while carrying out a route clearance operation. The BBC is reporting that Taiwan has responded to bird flu fears by starting work on its own version of the antiviral drug Tamiflu without waiting for the manufacturer's consent. Taiwan officials said they had applied for the right to copy the drug, but the priority was to protect the public. Correspondents say Tamiflu, made by Swiss pharmaceutical giant Roche, cannot cure bird flu but is widely seen as the best antiviral drug to fight it. Bird flu has killed at least 60 people in Asia since December 2003. Scientists fear the lethal H5N1 strain of the virus could combine with human flu or mutate into a form that is easily transmissible between humans, triggering a flu pandemic. Several countries have asked Roche for the right to make generic copies of Tamiflu. The Taiwanese government said it will not market the drug commercially. The British government said yesterday the strain of bird flu that killed a parrot in quarantine is the deadly H5N1 strain that has plagued Asia and recently spread to Europe and Turkey. According to the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, scientists determined that the parrot imported from South America died of the strain of avian flu that has devastated poultry stocks in Asia and killed at least 60 people. The virus is spread by migrating wild birds and has recently been found in birds in Russia, Turkey, and Romania. While H5N1 is easily transmitted between birds, so far it's still hard for humans to contract, but that could all change if it mutates. Liberians are preparing for a runoff election to choose a new president. The peaceful nature of the first round of polling suggests that Liberians do not want a repeat of the 14-year-old war that left the country in ruins. But the country still faces a delicate road to peace. FSRN Sam Olukia reports from Lagos.
3 years after Liberia's civil war ended, Liberians feel that a full return to peace is now within reach. Even former warlord Yomi Johnson, who was a key player of the civil war, says the time for peace has come.
We do not want trouble where you have African leaders moving from one place to another place seeking peace, where you have influx of refugees moving here, there, where you will cause humanitarian crisis. I don't want that. Because Liberians everywhere are tired. Liberians are tired. We are being humiliated in exile.
For the first time after the civil war, Liberians have been able to hold an election. Dave Peterson, director of the African program of the U.S.-based National Endowment for Democracy, monitored elections in Liberia. He says the peaceful conduct of the elections shows that Liberians are ready for peace.
The elections were held in a very calm and peaceful atmosphere. Liberians are demanding peace from their leaders. There will have to be a second round, of course, and we all hope that that will also be peaceful, but I think that this first round shows that Liberians really do want peace.
But Sylvester Odion Aheni of the Lagos-based Center for Constitutionalism and Demilitarization warns that the road to peace is still a delicate one. He says one factor that could again threaten the country's peace is a plan under which Western-backed external bodies will shape Liberia's economic future after the election.
Liberia is not a place where you can experiment with the so-called GMAP, whereby, you know, external forces come in to manage almost every sector of the national economy. It's a place where, by whatever economic agenda you put in place, must take into consideration the well-being, a welfare aspect for the population of Liberia.
On November 8th, a runoff election will be conducted between the two candidates that scored the highest votes in the just concluded presidential election. These are ex-international footballer George Weah and former World Bank economist Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Liberia's population consists of the country's indigenous people and free slaves who were resettled from the United States after the end of the slave era. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
Scientists from Brazil and the U.S. say new research suggests deforestation of the Brazilian Amazon has been underestimated by at least 60%. Deforestation in the Amazon is on such a massive scale that the only way of measuring it is by using satellites. The trouble has been that while traditional aerial images can show areas that have been completely destroyed, they do not reveal selective logging of single valuable trees such as mahogany. With input from the NASA Space Agency, the joint U.S. and Brazilian team used an ultra-high-resolution technique to examine just how much selective logging was going on. The report, published in the U.S. journal Science, also found that about 25% more carbon had been released into the atmosphere than estimated, possibly enough to affect climate change. In the KABU Morning News for Monday, October 24th, Chris Andre edited the news, KABU volunteers edited the tape stories, and Jim Thompson is on the board right now. I'm Blaine Palmer. Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy in the morning, patchy fog, chances of showers, then clearing partially in the afternoon. Highs around 60. Tonight will be partly cloudy with lows around 45. Thank you for listening to KBOO. We clear the air at 90.7 FM Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA. 91.9 FM and Hood River on translator K220HR. Coming up this morning on KBOO. At 7:30, Cecil and Celeste host more talk radio. Their guest is Eric Ward, currently the field director for the Center for a New Community, which aims to build community justice and equality. He's the editor of three books, and his most recent writings have appeared in the Southern Poverty Law Center Journal. At 9, it's the Old Mole Variety Hour with interviews, commentary, and analysis of current issues. At 10, Lisa Loving guest hosts Health Watch. Her guest is Beau Rinaldi, local vegan restaurateur, cookbook author, and herbalist. At 10:30, Eduardo de Landeros Tierra hosts Earth Watch. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Stay tuned to KBOO for all of those great things, and we'll see you again next time.
This is the KBOO Community Calendar on air for Monday, October 24th, 2005. Women are invited to become a part of the formation and creation of a new community resource, a women's art and health collective. The space available to house the project is wide open to possibility. Some ideas have been a select library, in-house boutique selling women's arts and crafts, moon lodge gatherings, dance times, healing space, and self-gynecology study. These women will meet for a Whole Foods potluck tonight, Monday the 24th, at 6:30 p.m. at the Center Ring, located at 5339 Southeast Foster Road. Further information is available at 503-441-1372 and on the KBOO online calendar. The Mazamas Mountaineering Organization is holding their annual Discovery Night, which is an event introducing mountain climbing, hiking, and exploring the outdoors to anyone interested in these active pursuits. New members and other people interested in climbing mountains or rock walls and how you can experience the wilderness safely and competently are welcome. There'll be free pizza, snacks, and a no-host bar will be available. That's happening tonight, Monday, October 24th, at the Doug Fir at 830 East Burnside, just around the corner from the KBOO studios. The phone contact is 503-227-2345, and web contact information is included in the KBOO online calendar. Friends of the Multnomah County Library want people to know that today is 75% off discount day at the 32nd sale of donated books to benefit the Multnomah County Library System. It's at 1635 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. Hours today are 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and that phone contact is 503-224-9176. Their website is www.friends-library.org. Coming up midday Tuesday, October 25th at Reed College, nationally syndicated columnist Norman Solomon and singer-songwriter David Rovics will visit Oregon as part of a West Coast Stop the Wars tour to help strengthen and expand the peace movement. Proceeds for this event benefit the Portland Alliance. Norman Solomon is executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy and the co-founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. In this appearance, Solomon explores the government's tendency to choose war as a policy solution and objective, and the resulting tactics they use to gain public support. That's Tuesday from noon to 1:30 p.m. at Reed College, located at 3203 Southeast Woodstock. Phone contact is Justin Wilson at 503-517-5104. This event is included in the calendar at portland.indymedia.org. The KBOO Programming Committee is running an evaluation of all KBOO's programs that air on Monday and Tuesday, 24 hours a day on those days, starting at 5:30 a.m. And the most important evaluations are those that come from you, KBOO listeners. More information, including downloadable program evaluation forms, appears on KBOO's homepage at kboo.fm. This has been the KBOO Community Calendar on air for Monday, October 24th, 2005. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland for Oregon, USA.
Norman Solomon, hard-hitting columnist with a progressive criticism of the media, will be in Portland October 24th at 7 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church, which is located at 1838 Southwest Jefferson. That's near a MAC stop. Sullivan is a fellow of the media watchdog group, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. His syndicated column appears in the Portland Alliance. Appearing with Norman Sullivan will be David Rovics, international musician and folk singer for Peace and Justice. Mark your calendars for Norman Sullivan and David Rovics on Monday, October 24th at 7 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church, which is located at 1838 Southwest Jefferson. For more information, please call the Portland Alliance at 503-239-4991. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor for this event.
KBOO is proud to present Democracy Now!, the award-winning news and public affairs show hosted by Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. Tune in weekdays at 11 a.m. following the KBOO radio zine for Democracy Now! Here on your community radio station, KBOO.